Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. Well, unless some new information comes in pretty darn quick, we can pronounce the obituary on Oregon's last geyser. In fact, the last geyser in the Pacific Northwest, which appears to have gone still in Lakeview, Oregon. Oregon's last geothermal water blaster, which was named Old Perpetual, erupted for the last time sometime in the spring of 2009. A few dozen years ago, though, the state had two of these things. This story was first published on November 12th of 2010. Here we go. Sometime in the spring of 2009, the only continuously erupting geyser in the entire Pacific Northwest fired its regular shot for the last time. Many Oregonians didn't even know the Beaver State had a geyser. In fact, it has, or had, two, three, if you really lower your standards of what a geyser is and include Mickey Hot Springs in Harney County. Both the other two geysers were wells that had been drilled 50 to 80 years ago with surprising results, and neither one is regularly active today. The first one was Old Perpetual, and it erupted for the first time during drilling for Hunter's Hot Springs, a hydrotherapy resort there in Lakeview, in 1923. Every 90 seconds, the thing went off, shooting scalding water 60 feet into the air. Every 90 seconds, for decades. This was the best thing that could possibly have happened for the resort, which is still in business today. It was also big news for the tiny town of Lakeview. Surprisingly quickly, the pool at the base of the geyser became populated with a colony of bluefish, which could tolerate the unusually warm water. Now, the bluefish may have been introduced, or perhaps the warm pool was there before the geyser was drilled and it was an existing stock. Over the years, the geyser was seen to fade a little bit as nearby agriculture ramped up. This made sense. Pump more water out of the ground to spray it on crops, and there's less to blast into the air. But no one much worried about it, and the geyser always came back to life in the fall, just in time for the spectacular, steamy, snowy wintertime eruptions. By the end of the 20th century, the geyser had become almost entirely dormant for the dry part of the year, springing back to life every fall. Then, in the fall of 2009, it didn't. It simply quit. Some locals suspect a new geothermal well, which the city of Lakeview drilled near the hot springs, has sapped its forces. The geyser quit erupting just a few years after the well was drilled, so that correlation is suspicious. And in fact, that sort of thing has happened before. In the mid-1990s, a tomato company built a greenhouse operation on a piece of high desert near Crane in Harney County, just a stone's throw from Crystal Crane Hot Springs, an old-fashioned soak-and-swim resort, popular with the locals and with the few visitors who have discovered it. As soon as the greenhouse went in, the water temperature in the pools at Crystal plummeted. There was quite a bit of resentment locally as a result. Many people thought putting the greenhouses there was tantamount to an act of piracy. The greenhouse operation has since gone out of business, and water temperatures at Crystal are back to normal. In Lakeview, though, the city insists that it had nothing to do with the geyser petering out, saying its well is far too deep to have affected the geyser's water sources. Also, they're quick to point out geysers don't last forever, even ones named Old Perpetual. That's particularly true for geysers that spring from drilled well shafts. Case in point, Oregon's other large geyser, Crump Geyser, just a few dozen miles from Old Perpetual. Crump Geyser got its start in 1959 when landowner Charles Crump made a deal with the Nevada Thermal Power Company, which was looking for geothermal sources for power plants. Crump suggested a spot, and the company drilled deep, very deep, without results. When the well reached 1,681 feet, the drillers gave up. A few days later, when Crump was there to look at the well and scratch his head and wonder why it was dry, the ground rumbled and a column of water nearly 200 feet tall roared into the sky in front of him. This was a big league geyser, bigger than many of the geothermal monsters of Yellowstone National Park and Iceland, including Old Faithful. For a short time, Oregon actually had two regular geysers, one of them world class. It was indeed a short time, though. In the early 1960s, some unknown clowns apparently decided it would be fun to drop some big rocks down the well casing and watch the water shoot them out. The rocks plugged it up, and it hasn't erupted since. One of Crump's other wells, drilled in 1954, did start erupting after the big one was plugged, but it was fitful and erratic, and by the 1990s it had petered out completely. Well, that's the story for today, and before I cue up the outro, I wanted to mention one other thing. On the first Tuesday of every month, I do a free history lecture at the Jack London Bar in Portland. The Jack London's in the basement of the Rialto Pool Room on the corner of 4th and Alder in downtown Portland, and the show starts at 7:30 p.m. It usually runs an hour or so. If you happen to be in Portland, please stop by and introduce yourself. If it's hot outside, do bring a jacket. The air conditioning in the Jack is spectacularly effective, which is itself pretty awesome when it's 90 degrees outside. Now, the next show is on Tuesday, August 6th, and the topic is The Rise and Fall of the Ku Klux Klan in 1920s Oregon and the connection to the Burnside Bridge. Hope to see you there. Well, that's it for our show for today. This show is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to this podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone reader, a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, and a couple other minor components. Photographs and other images that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you'll also find full citations to the sources used in writing this story, along with more than 200 other articles written over the last 5 years, all organized by date of publication. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon for learning and for fun, so I don't sell advertising or ask for donations, but if you feel a need to make a donation anyway, may I suggest that you buy a copy of my book instead? It's called Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, published by the History Press in 2012. You can order it from the store link on offbeatoregon.com if you'd like, but if you still have a local community bookstore in your town, I hope you'll consider buying it from them instead. It sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk about history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Don't be a stranger, especially don't be a stranger if you have a good idea for one of these columns in the future. Speaking of the future, our next show will be coming your way at around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.